Scott, have you seen Cat People?
I have seen Cat People, and it's a fantastic movie.
Isn't it great?
And of course, we're talking about the original 1942 version, not the 1982 version directed by Grand Rapids native Paul Schrader.
Right, which is a fun remake, but it's not the classic that the 1942 Cat People is. And Cat People was the first of 9 horror films produced by Val Lewton, sort of gothic horror, psychological horror films.
And all for RKO Pictures.
Yeah, it's an interesting story because Val Lewton's 9 films made between 1942 and 1946 are unique. They're just a style and structure and just a type of movie that really stands by itself. And I'll read the names of them because they're great. These are 9 films from 42 to 46. Cat People, I Walked with a Zombie, The Leopard Man, The Seventh Victim, The Ghost Ship, Curse of the Cat People, The Body Snatcher, Isle of the Dead, and Bedlam.
And some of these starred Boris Karloff, and they all have a look and a feel that are totally unique in terms of the horror movies of the time, and they have almost a uniform feel in terms of tone and presentation.
Right. And that's what's very interesting about them, because what the main thing they have in common is their work of this one producer. And this producer working with a particular unit from RKO Pictures. The story behind Lewton, it's kind of interesting. Lewton was a protege of David O. Selznick, who's one of the great producers of the 1930s. He produced Gone with the Wind, for example. And he has Lewton has a few credits, like on Gone with the Wind, Rebecca, and A Star is Born. Then he got this job with RKO Pictures, and RKO was reeling because they had lost huge money on the two Orson Welles films, Citizen Kane and The Magnificent Ambersons. They're classics today. Many people consider Kane one of the greatest movies ever made, but they were box office flops. And so RKO said, what can we do? And they looked around and they saw the example of Universal Studios. Universal Pictures had been a minor studio throughout the silent era and at the beginning of the sound era, and then they got this great idea. And they made all these horror films, Frankenstein, Dracula, The Mummy, Wolfman, and all the sequels. And they made a fortune on them. They were these incredibly successful, low-budget pictures. So RKO hired Val Lewton, and they said, you're going to be the producer and run this B-movie unit, and we're going to give you 3 conditions. They wanted, we want horror movies, like Universal. And they said, here's the conditions. We will give you the title for each movie. You have to produce it for under $150,000, which now seems ridiculous, but even then wasn't very much money. And number 3, it has to be under 75 minutes long.
And because they're going to be B movies, and they're going to be playing either before or after the A movie.
Right. Again, B movies are both an aesthetic judgment. Nowadays, it's more used to say, a low budget kind of goofy movie or whatever. But in those days, it meant a specific thing because every show in a movie theater had 2 movies and the studio would have a B. It's like the flip side of a single, the A side and the B side. But these B movies were so successful, they were drawing people into the theater a lot of times instead of the headliner A picture.
And one of the things that I found really interesting, we're talking about Val Lewton as the producer, and he had directors like Jacques Tenor, Mark Robeson, and Robert Wise, but it's really the Val Lewton stamp on all these movies.
It is the Val Lewton stamp, but we can also, again, avoid that trap of saying the auteur is one person, because Lewton worked with this one unit at RKO Pictures. He got the same people in over and over again, like you mentioned the directors. Of those 9 films, Tourneur directed 3, Mark Robeson directed 4, and Robert Wise directed 2. And here's a few other things. The art directors were the same 2 people, Albert D'Agostino and Walter Keller, all 9 pictures. Same art directors. And the art director, nowadays might often more often be called the production designer. That's the person who oversees kind of all the style that you see, except for the lighting and camera work of the director of photography. But, the costumes, the props, the setting, locations, the kind of look of the film. And they had the same one in every one. And then you get to director of photography to further what influenced the look. 5 of the 9 were Nicholas Musaraka, a famous film noir cinematographer, and guy Robert DeGrasse did a couple more. the music for 8 of the 9, music is really important in setting the mood, right? Especially in something like a horror film. 8 of the 9 were this composer, Roy Webb. So you get a lot of, there was a real team.
The other thing that I noticed was that the actors are spread out through all, you know, all the movies, in terms of a lot of times it's not necessarily the main actors as much as a lot of the supporting cast they're all RKO players.
Right. You know, most of them were people under contract. Someone like Boris Karloff, who was in 3 of the films, The Body Snatcher, Isle of the Dead, and Bedlam, those are the last three. I'm not sure he was under contract with RKO at first, but they reached out to him, you know, and he was very pleased to do films where he got to play kind of a real character. Maybe it's an evil character, but it's not a monster, right? Like, it's not the Frankenstein monster for once.
I grew up loving Boris Karloff as the Frankenstein monster, and also, of course, as the narrator of The Grinch Stole Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And but I have to say, I have a greater appreciation for him as an actor from the 3 movies that he's on here, especially The Body Snatcher. He is just fantastic in that film.
He's terrific. And that movie is based on the real story of some doctors in the 19th century who, in order to teach their medical students in dissections, were stealing bodies from graves. But then they actually committed a couple murders in order to get bodies. So he plays a terrible character, but yeah, what a performance.
Mr. Gray. And Mr. also Gray. In that film is in a smaller role is Bela Lugosi.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the times they're on screen together. A few other people got starts in that. Kim Hunter, who isn't she famous for Planet of the Apes?
Yes.
She had her film debut in The Seventh Victim. But we should talk about what is it about these films that makes them so interesting? How are they different than, you know, horror films now? I have a quote here. This is from Val Lewton. He said, "Our formula is very simple. A love story, 3 scenes of suggested terror, 1 scene of actual violence, and it's all over in less than 70 minutes. No grisly stuff for us, no mask-like faces, hardly human with gnashing teeth and hair standing on end, no creaking, no physical manifestations, no horror piled on horror. You can't keep up horror that's long sustained. It becomes something to laugh at." That's a note for us today, right? There's so many horror movies after a while, it's just whatever. "But take a sweet love story or a story of sexual antagonisms, people like the rest of us, and you cut in, you're here and there by suggestion, and you've got something."
And I mean, so much of Cat People fits that description. And there's so many, the way that it's directed and paced, and yet you really don't see anything in certain scenes. There's just suggestion. And that, but it still makes it very scary.
Yeah, and that's the great thing, because, I mean, so if you go back to, if you see The Wolfman, you watch Lon Chaney Jr. in the Universal picture of The Wolfman from the early 30s, you watch him transform from a human to a wolf or a wolfman on screen. But in Cat People, so you've got this suggestion, the characters even believe that this one character is kind of cursed and she's turning into a leopard. But we never see that transformation on screen. So it seems like maybe it's just psychological horror, but then you go, maybe in that one scene, she did turn into a leopard, you know? And that's what's great, is they do have a supernatural element.
And another thing that's great about the films are what you mentioned in terms of the brevity. You know, so many films these days that are 3 hours long, sometimes it's necessary to have a 3-hour movie, but certainly with a suspense film or a horror film, anything that's over 90 minutes sometimes is overkill.
Yeah, but these films are all under, I think there's one that exceeded 75 by a couple.
One is 77 minutes.
Okay, you checked it
out.
And
I think that's Bedlam.
Uh-huh. But all the rest are under 75. Some are even in the high 60s.
Yeah, like 67 minutes.
Yeah, which almost seems like an episode of a TV series now, but it also shows you how you can tell a great story if you're efficient and you don't have any extra junk in it. And then, of course, these movies have just, they're all black and white, of course, and they're all, they just have a beautiful, you know, dark, shadowy, film noirish look, although they're not mystery film noir type films. They really are horror and suspense type films.
And you were talking about the art directors, and one of the things that I watched a documentary after seeing the movies, and in the documentary they point out that there are scenes that in Cat People, it's supposed to be Central Park in New York City. I Walk with a Zombie, it's supposed to be on this island.
Haiti, right?
And actually, these are indoor sets. And it, you know, I didn't really pick up on that in watching it. It's so effectively filmed.
Oh, yeah. They're very much Hollywood studio films made entirely on Hollywood sets. For $150,000, they couldn't have even traveled to the place to make more money, to make location shots. And, you know, some of the stuff, like I Walked with a Zombie, I mean, think how huge the zombie genre is. But this is before the sort of, you know, virus-laden, brain-eating monster zombies now. This is more like the zombie idea out of voodoo or whatever. And
although it is still the zombie is still supposedly a dead person that's still living.
Right, right. Curse of the Cat People is an amazing one. It's not really a sequel.
It's not really a sequel, and it's not really a horror movie. It's more like a fantasy film. And the main character is a child.
Yeah, this actress, what was her, Ann Carter, was 7 years old. If you want to see one of the greatest performances ever by a kid in a movie, I mean, she's in virtually every scene. It's like she's in always on screen. And it's really a story about how adults try to kill children's dreams, how children make stuff up and see things, and adults say, oh, no, be real, you know, and try to bring them down to earth and take away their imaginations.
And the film does it not just with the main character and her family, but also a secondary character, an older woman who's an actress and her daughter. And she doesn't recognize her daughter as being her daughter. She thinks that she's an imposter.
Well, that's also because maybe her daughter's a ghost, right? It's a ghost story, too. So all these films, you know, they're very moody, but they also do have this supernatural element and scary elements, you know. If you're willing to give yourself over to the old school type of movie, they can be pretty scary, too.
Now, in terms of my introduction to Val Lewton back, you know, almost 40 years ago, it was actually with The Leopard Man, which was based on Black Alibi, a novel by Cornell Woolrich, the mystery writer. And I knew about that because of one of my heroes, the writer Harlan Ellison, always said that that was one of his favorite movies. And we were talking about this before we started recording about how the three sort of scary scenes in there, the violent scenes, are very effectively done.
They are. Also, it's a good example of how how RKO gave him these titles and said, make a horror film. And you see The Leopard Man and everyone thinks, oh, it's going to be like Wolfman. We're going to see someone transform into a leopard. All that referred to was a guy who had a leopard called The Leopard Man, and the leopard escaped. But then the scenes you're referring to, the first scene is when that escaped leopard kills someone. And the next two, at first we think it's the leopard, but then
who knows?
Right.
You find out later.
Maybe they're murders. Who knows what exactly. And that one, you know, that's not one of my favorites. I know you probably like it more than me. But even if you're not, like, by the end, you're like, that was okay, you cannot deny that you will have seen two or three scenes in there that are just burned in your memory for their just visual amazingness.
Now, one of the things that to me that's really fascinating with these nine movies is that, like you said, they're made between 1942 and 1946, 4 years that these were made. And then Val Lewton didn't produce any more of these type of movies. He produced some other films before his death.
He died at 46 of a heart attack.
And there's nothing that I can think of that even is remotely like these films that were made later.
There really isn't. I mean, Val Lewton really does have a sort of cult following, and they've, you know, restored all his movies. It's just this little gem moment in film history of these wonderful, unusual films.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Scott.